you're a professional, right? But you're a slave to work. Yeah. And so freedom from bondage is sort of a big deal. And mm-hmm. the only way that you're going to be able to do that as an attorney is figure out the math, which is figure out the business side of it.
Hey, law firm owners, welcome to the Your Practice Master podcast. We're your hosts. I'm MPS.
And I'm Richard James. And MPS, today we've got another fantastic guest. They're friends, they're members. They're also past EAY champions, and they did so in dramatic fashion just a couple of years ago. We got to watch their growth over the years, and then they finally decided to apply, and wham, they won. They were voted most popular, not most popular, they voted EAY by a popular vote of their members. We're here with Bart and Seth. And Bart and Seth, thank you for coming on today, and thank you for sharing your wisdom. We're excited for you to be able to give a glimpse from your view of your journey as to what somebody who's listening to this might be struggling with, and maybe you're going to be able to capture one nugget out of what you say today to give them a feeling of hope that they're headed in the right direction as they're running a law firm. Because as you well know, this stuff isn't easy, but you've made it look easier than it probably is. So we're excited to hear your story. So thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
You're so welcome.
Of course. And hey, look, I'm not sure if you guys had the opportunity to listen into any of the previous ones, but we like to kick off with an icebreaker. So this goes to both of you. You could do it together or individually, of course. But what is maybe something that not everybody knows about you?
So I'll go first. I was a hunting guide in Idaho back in, I don't know, the early 1990s. And one of the interesting things that I found out about Idaho is that when you come from Alabama and you think you're going to be a hunting guide, if you're going to purchase a pair of boots, because I wanted to look the part. And I did. I purchased a pair of boots, went out to Idaho. And the first thing that the guide said was, you know what, we're going to take a little bit of a walk down into the Idaho swamps. And so I did. And as I was walking into the Idaho swamps with my horse, Skeeter, my shoes, which were cardboard dancing shoes, just disappeared right from under my feet. Because I bought dancing boots instead of actual cowboy boots because I was an idiot.
I don't understand how someone from a farm does that.
I was raised on an Alabama farm. We didn't have swamps or dancing boots.
Since you mentioned dancing, I might as well just say I've been consumed over the last few months with Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be doing ballroom dancing and a crazy skit here in a month. And ballroom
why don't you give them a shameless plug, Bart, with what that charity is so everybody knows in case they want
to. Yeah, sure. So there's the charity is the Primary Healthcare, which is a local healthcare organization that provides free and low-cost healthcare to needy adults and children. And they've used the platform of Dancing with the Stars as to have as an interesting way to raise money. Mm-hmm. Proud to be a part of it and definitely gotten out of my comfort zone.
So you're the star, and you have a professional dancer you're dancing with.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just to let you guys know, he's doing a great job of raising money. I'm only serious about 2% of the time, but the charity is fabulous. We actually went through one of the places and walked through it, and so he's done a really wonderful job, and the money's going to a really wonderful charity.
That's great. Well, our donation's coming in. I keep wondering if Maria might be able to make it to the celebration, to the live performance. I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately, with what she's got going on. But anyway, we're certainly looking forward to seeing video afterwards. And
Richard, he will come to you.
Oh, that's great.
For you, or if he won't do it, I will.
That's great. And Seth, as you may not know, I got my first buck this year. It took me 41 years of, not 41 years of hunting, 41 years of waiting. I hunted for like 7 years from 12 to like 19 and never even basically saw a deer. And then this year, when I told that story to a buddy of mine who owns a bunch of land here in North Carolina, he goes, we're going to change that this year. And he told me the same thing everybody always told me when I was hunting as a kid. Oh, you're going to see a lot of deer. You got to be selective. And I'm like, yeah. And of course, on the first day and the first couple of hours, I was able to bag my first 7-pointer. So
it was, 7-pointer.
Yeah. 41 years.
Let's dance our way into learning a little bit more about their journey. Why don't you share individually your highlights of your entrepreneurial journey as a law firm owner and then where you're at now, kind of how you're together now and how we got.
I think we start off with the difficulty of the mindset change. Mm. For me, I don't know, I think Bart, from being an attorney professional to a business owner. Now, I refer to Richard James sometimes as Kool-Aid, but it is a nice Kool-Aid. He came back from the first Richard James and he drank a lot of it. I was not having much of it because I thought I was an attorney and then I was a pretty special guy. Over the course of being at Richard James, understanding, you know, it is difficult to understand that your business is like anybody else, especially as an attorney. It is hard to let go of that ego. And I've got a massive ego. It took a while. Bart was pretty straightforward and this is where we should go. It took a while for me and it was a difficult transition and he was very helpful along that way. But it was a transition that I'm glad I made. So if you can let go of your ego of being an attorney, you're not God, you're not even a demigod, but you're a business person trying to make money. You're providing a service to your clients and you're trying to provide the best service you can so that they get the decision that they need from a decision maker. If you can make that transition, then you can make a lot of money.
So Bart, I want to hear your perspective on this too, but real quick on this mindset conversation about ego. So we all have it. Every one of us has it. And recently, Michael and I, just a couple of nights ago, we are in the professional coaching space. We are professional coaches, advisors, consultants. This is what we do. But it's a business like any other, and we wanted to join an industry-specific mastermind. And so we started seeking them out. And honestly, in many of the cases, there was a bunch of pride going, we already know this and this and this, and who's this guy or gal to teach us? We feel like we've got it pretty dialed in. And then finally, it was the sales rep that helped us understand it. Of course, a good sales rep will do that for you. They helped us understand that our ego was getting in the way and that once we were able to put our ego aside, we signed the contract the other day. Would you agree with that, Michael?
Yeah, it was very easy to go down that path. But you're right. She was a very good sales rep and she really did help us get out of our own way because that was really the problem. We were in our own way. And I think we just finally came to the realization on that call that was the case. And if we wanted to see what we wanted to achieve happen, we had to get out of that way.
But to your point about not being a business owner, I was talking to a woman in our world. I won't name her, but I was talking to her last night in a separate meeting. And she said, I got my undergraduate like in business administration. She goes, but for whatever reason, I never saw my law firm as a business. She said, I saw it like as a practice or a service, but she says, I never even applied the things I learned in law school besides how to set up my banking account and checking account and things like that. She goes, I never applied any of that knowledge into growing my law firm. I didn't even see the parallel connection, which is interesting. So I don't know, Bart, how about you along your journey here? Did you have a similar feeling or was your experience different as you were taking this journey?
No, that's exactly where I was going. I was a finance major. And as a senior, I helped small businesses in town through the SBA develop business plans. And yet when I opened my own law practice, I did none of that. Almost none of it. I did the bare necessities for a business and spent 95% of the time worrying about how to be a lawyer and 5% of the time thinking this was a business. And it failed. It failed in 4 years. And I look back and I just kick myself. It's not like I had a biology degree. What was I doing?
Okay. So you're intelligent. You guys are both intelligent humans. Attorneys by nature have to be intelligent to get to where you are education-wise and pass the bar, LSATs, all that stuff. Okay, great. So you've got the intelligence. You've got basic common sense. You deal with people all the time. You have to have a reasonable amount of common sense and somewhat street sense. And Jim Rohn always says, never ask this question. But I'm going to ask it somewhat for you to maybe answer what you think the answer is for those listening. Why do you think that is? Why is it that lawyers, was it that they were just drilled into them by law school that they were practitioners and they weren't in business and they were servants? Was it the mentors that you had? What do you think the reason? This is a very common answer we get. And I know there's somebody out there listening to this right now. They're on the cusp of thinking this is where they're supposed to go. And they're waiting with bated breath for you to answer, like, why? What do you think it is? And how did you break through it?
there are four classes in our society, the owning class, the professional class, the working class. And the professional class, which is what we are, the mediators between the owning class and the working class, we're the ones that the working class needs, or even our own professional class. They need us for a service because we're the ones that provide a pathway to a decision maker that give them life, liberty, or happiness or whatever. And so they try to give us a sense of accomplishment. They give us a sense of deference. They talk to us in a certain way that makes us feel pretty good about ourselves. And so we get a sense from interacting with other people. We talk, we know how to talk somebody down. So if you get in a conversation with us, you're going to lose that conversation. So people will move away from us, or they defer to us, or they're worried or scared about us. And we move in and out of society like that. And so we begin to build up this sense of, well, we must be pretty special because whatever we say goes. So I think that is the core, especially with respect to attorneys, as to why we think we're gods. Because people treat us like that, not because we are, because they're scared to engage us. And for good reason, because if they do, we'll take them out.
Yeah, you got black belt in verbal judo.
That's exactly right.
Right.
You know, I don't think of myself as a god. I don't think I come at it from that angle. I think it's a matter of, I saw myself as a professional providing services to people, and that if I did a good job, more people would come to see me, and that it was just going to be an organic thing that didn't require me to market, didn't require me to pay attention to the business side of things. But I came to realize that if I don't treat my practice as a business, then ultimately I can't provide those services to people. And also, as we grew, it's one thing to have a couple of employees, but when you have 10 or 11, you've got to start dealing with other things. You have to have systems in place. Things are not reproducible between 10 people as it is with one employee. And we needed to treat that business-wise from a more professional standpoint.
I guess I may pretend to be a guy. I don't believe that either.
Well, you already said that only 2% of the time you're serious. So
but I think it's institutionalization, right? You are interacting. You probably have had some of the same issues, right? You guys are able to stand in front of lots of people and speak. There's not a lot of people that can do that, right?
And they're all lawyers.
So you have got to have had at some point this, I'm doing a pretty good job here. I'm taking care of all these lawyers who have a, you know, if they have a verbal, what did you say? A belt, in, a judo, right? Verbal, whatever it is.
Yeah, black belt in verbal judo.
Sensei, right? So you must have some, because people are probably afraid to engage you at some point too, because you're fearless. And that fearlessness makes you think of yourselves in ways that's not true. Just because you can do that doesn't mean you're a moral human being. Doesn't mean you care about other people. It doesn't mean you're good at golf. Doesn't mean anything, right?
Well, we know the last one is true.
I'm talking about my
very true,
not you.
So I'm curious. I think this was helpful. Like, we learned the evolution of it. We learned the why. What was like the flip of the switch for you? So what was that aha moment?
I think it came from my wife. Just seeing how hard I worked, how spent I was when I got home, how stressed that I was, and deciding and telling me there's got to be a better way of doing this. And one day I've got to retire and I better start planning for that. And I need to take stress off of me, and continuing to do things the way I was without good business systems in place was stressing me out. So if it were not for her, I wouldn't have turned my attention to running my business, having my business run more smoothly and giving myself more peace of mind. And now it's turned into, I understand how to get the peace of mind, and I think I can really take this business and give it some wings. And it's not just freedom for me. It's, wow, I know how to tune this thing up.
So that Bart is really good at, okay? He's really good at figuring out business systems and whatever. But that is the puzzle. If you can let go of being an attorney god, the puzzle's a little scary for me. He's a finance major. He's got a good, I'm not, I'm a theater, history, poli sci, you know, what in the world? But if you can get your arms around this new machine that you're trying to build, and Bart was immediately aware of this machine. He's the one who said, this is a good machine, Seth. You should really think about helping me build it. It took me a long time to do that. But the puzzle in the machine is, it's fantastic. It's amazing. It's fun. It's overwhelming at first because the fire hose of information that he brought back from the first time he saw you guys blew me out the door. So you're going to be overwhelmed. I certainly was. And frankly, sometimes I still am.
I want to comment and then question. So first of all, I think it's good news. My ECIB, my East Coast Italian bride, doesn't necessarily watch all of these. So she won't necessarily hear me admit the fact that she has called me on the carpet in a good way more times than I care to admit. And so thank God for my better half. She does it on a regular basis, sometimes knowingly, sometimes unwittingly, but she still does it. And so, yeah, we need somebody in our life to speak truth to us that we'll listen to, that we respect. That can be that iron welded moment that says, okay, we've got to do something about this. And then the other thing I would say is, you know, what you said, Seth, is that you didn't say this, but I'm going to say this. So I've said it before, and attorneys are naturally intelligent beings. And so what my most fun, and Michael, you could comment on this as well, my most fun part of working with attorneys is once the light bulb goes off, the speed at which you guys and gals grab it and run with it is like a lot of fun to watch, because you're intelligent people. Like, I don't have to worry about whether you got the smarts to figure out what I'm laying down, right? Or to pick up what I'm laying down. So once you get it and you're willing, the speed is awesome. And now, Bart, you actually said you feel like, wow, we could actually make this thing fly. We've gone from everything was broken, I was stressed, and the look on my face, my wife had to finally call me out, to now looking at your business and this machine that you've built going, whoa, with a little bit of adjustment here or there, we could really go.
And we're trying to figure out a way to get him into that investor, that, what do you call it? CEO. So yeah, that's what we just got off of the Zoom meeting with somebody, trying to figure out how to place Bart, he's a little older than I am, in that position. Not that I wouldn't be there helping him do that, but I'm a little younger and I can push the
car. Well, and you just said it. You may not love the CEO role or figuring out the puzzle, and that's okay. You can have a COO operating the firm in that role if that's what you need. Remember, you guys are in contingency, right? All of your business predominantly is contingency.
Right.
So you have a lag between the growth that you're experiencing, client acquisition, and the income that you're going to see. So some of this is allowing the income to catch up to your growth, because you're probably, if you're doing what we talk about you doing, you're projecting forward as where your future revenues will be. And you guys can clearly see, based on the cases you're acquiring, where you're going to be. And that's without a home run coming in. And you're going to have the free-flowing cash flow to be able to pay for that person at some point. Or you're going to have the time and the runway, if you can identify who that person might be now in your firm, who you could raise up to become that person to replace Bart in that role. And so there's no doubt in my mind you will get there.
I don't want to replace Bart. Bart would make a fantastic CEO. He loves. So I get it, right? You have sometimes that you want to completely replace yourself, and maybe we'll be there at some point, Richard, NPS. Yeah, I would like to do some of the things that I see some of the folks in the Partners Club doing, which is having fun.
Yeah. And it can be. And don't let the fun fool you. The duck is calm on the top of the water, but the feet are pedaling awful fast underneath the water. I mean, that's just the reality of running a small business. I don't know anybody that's running any business of any meaningfulness whatsoever that isn't working fairly large number of hours as compared to most. I would say large number of effective working hours as compared to most. Michael and I still live a fairly balanced life with the number of hours that we work. But the number of hours that we work, like the minutes we work per hour, is very high percentage. There's very little waste in our working hours. And that's what kind of allows us to do that. And you can't have a highly performing business and not have the owner, the owners doing that over a longer period of time. At least I've never experienced anybody that could. Michael, I don't know if I've gotten us a little off track here. Where do you want to go?
I think this is really helpful. So I'm curious for you guys, what are some of the things you do on a daily basis, habit-wise, that lead to your continued success?
Planning out the day is important for me, tackling the projects that, listing the projects that need, that are urgent, that need to be done, making sure that I get to them as much as I can. I would say I still struggle with that a lot. It's hard because in my position, I'm constantly interrupted. I'm the one providing the information and the strategy for so many different cases. And so that's a big struggle. Mm-hmm. Setting aside the time for our business meetings and making sure that it's on the calendar and that we do it, because it's way too easy to just keep working the cases.
Totally.
And yes. So that has really helped.
Non-fee generating meetings is the hardest thing to do consistently. And it makes all the difference in the world.
We struggle with it too, guys.
Yep.
You know, partnerships are tough, right? And I hand selected this one
in
many ways, but I will tell you that I wouldn't have done it had it not been for who he was. But that being said, we struggle with this, even though I consider us really good at it. If we don't put it on the calendar, matter of fact, just this week, Michael, you and I reset and said, okay, let's do a new plan. We've got so much we got to get done. How about we make a commitment? We're going to get up earlier. So like, I'm normally a 6:30, 7, whatever a.m. kind of guy. And now it's like, okay, what can I do to get up at 5:30 and be started and get my morning routine and exercise and all that done? So I was like, I want to start by 7:30. And Michael's like, okay, how about if I promise we're at our desk by 8, right? Because I got whatever. And so we compromise and we're like, okay, we're going to commit to helping each other get to the desk by 8 o'clock working, not 8 o'clock and start checking email. No, working on a project that's designated. And then where are you and I going to talk every day? And we had to be like, okay, here's where we're going to talk every day. So we have a commitment of talking every day. And where are we going to have our planning meetings every week to make sure we're paying attention to what's going on? And this is all happening outside of all the other stuff that's happening and meetings that are happening and sales opportunities, and everything else, and revenue generating activity, as you said, or in your world, you use non-billable hours. And it's hard. And if you don't, the reason we had to do it is because, as you said, it's so easy to let it go. Before you know, you're 8 days and you haven't talked about it. You're 8 days and you haven't met. And then you're feeling this weirdness and emptiness and lack of direction. And you're wondering why. And you realize, oh, we skipped our meeting last week because you had to go to the dentist or whatever. I had to get my hair cut. That's a joke. You know, whatever. So my point is, it's not easy to do. And I will give you some advice if you want it. So one thing I had to do, because I actually built the first iteration of this business, my desire. So remember, my life cycle was I owned the insurance business where I learned how to sell. I owned the funeral business where I was on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I learned how to serve. And then I had the pet supply business where I learned how to build systems and had gobs and gobs of employees and every moving part in a business you can possibly imagine with inventory and everything else. And I learned like a massive level systems. But in each of those businesses, like, I just felt like there was just so many things out of my control. And somebody said, what do you want? Like, my first mentor was like, what do you want? And I said, I want a business where I'm just the advisor. And so I have team members who have run the company, but they come to me and I give them the advice all day long. I just want to be a professional advisor to my own company. And so I built it that way. As you said, Bart, before you know it, all you're doing all day long is giving advice. All you're doing all day long is feeling somebody's coming into the office, putting a straw in the back of your skull and sucking, right? That's what it feels like all day long. And so I had to figure out how to get a hold of this. And so for me, I just created open office hours for my team. And so I did it kind of often as I need to. Now we're down to once a week. But sometimes in the beginning, you got to do it once a day, where you just have an hour and no questions are allowed to be asked. So I have two rules. No questions are allowed to be asked before that time. And the second rule is no questions allowed to be brought without a possible solution. And so they come to the office, open office hours. And if they come and go, hey, what do you think? I go, that's not the right question, right? That's not how we frame it. Oh, here's what the challenge is. I think these are the two possible solutions. Which one do you think is better? Ah, now we've got something I can help you with because you've thought through it. And so the moment I did that, I was able to free up that X number of hours a day that I was working, and I could do work on projects or billable hour work, or as we say, whatever it was, without feeling I was going to be interrupted, because I created a safe place for them to come to. And since we're not doing heart surgery, there's not oftentimes life-threatening things. There were always exceptions, especially in the law firm. When I built the law firm, there were. And I used the red piece of paper rule because we had physical offices back then with nobody remotely. So I said, listen, if you need to interrupt me outside of these windows where we're going to do this, you need to have a red piece of paper in your hand that says this is an emergency situation with a client. And if you're holding that piece of paper, you can interrupt anybody anywhere to interrupt them. But without that piece of paper, it has to be held until open office hours. It worked really well. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to get into consulting. I just thought it might be helpful for anybody else listening to this that felt the same way you were about to feel right now, or you were feeling right now.
No, I think you're right. I think that I can set aside time for different things because I'm being approached on about business questions, but then I'm also being approached about how do I handle a case? How do I handle a case specific problem? Those are two different things. So I probably need different office hours for those different tasks.
Could be.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, just start with one of them. Just keep it simple. And then it'll grow. You'll get addicted to it. It'll grow from there.
Right.
All right, Michael. Sorry, I put my consulting hat on. I apologize.
No, I think it was helpful. I think that's good feedback for really anybody listening to this, because I think it's something most of them can relate to. I want to figure out what's got you guys excited. What's got you fired up? Could be personal. Could be business. What's got you excited today?
Can I take that?
You certainly can.
So we have a business opportunity that's involving a new line of work, a new practice area, one that could mean a significant growth, but also has a 2 to 5 year horizon on bringing in fees. Mm. And so this is a really big puzzle in terms of how to build it so that we don't go underwater as it's happening, have the capacity. So I feel like that I can see the project. I can see the pieces now that I didn't used to be able to see. I can see the marketing side. I can see the intake side. I can see the capacity side from the workflow. And we can use all the other systems we built in the other practice areas to make it work. But I can also see that we can't just turn the hose all the way on. It's not going to work that way. It's got to be a plan. Particularly when we could be 3 years into this before we realize any money. So that's going to require a smart plan, but I feel way more equipped to be able to do that than I ever have.
Seth, are you also excited about that, or is there something else?
That's why you interrupted me, because I would have started right in. He's, hey, can I talk for a second? Because you've been hugging this whole thing. Absolutely. That's what has got me excited. When we have our partners meetings, Bart and I, and we talk about things like this, it's where a lot of the magic happens, right? And a lot of times I'm sitting there thinking about things, and I eventually just take the minutes, because Bart is, he's a visionary and can see a lot of these things. And he just begins talking about, here's where we need to go. And here's how we, you know, it's really sort of the way in which we move forward as a business. I'm not saying I don't have any visionary qualities, but those meetings and the ones between the two of us are extremely important. And now we have other meetings. We have a management team. We have a marketing team. And then those people are superstars, which is weird, because usually you don't have more than a couple of superstars. Maybe you guys do, but it is weird for me to see, because law firms typically have a couple of really competent people and the rest of them are not. We've somehow been able to develop 4 or 5 different people who are now superstars, which is remarkable.
It is remarkable. It is unique in that I think a lot of firms would love to have that. I think that happened because of a few things. It happened. You were able to attract those people because of who you both became. When you left the world of being a practitioner and a lawyer and went into the world of figuring out the puzzle of business, you started to build a machine that good people could come in and run. And then together, you poured into them. You didn't just say, go do it. Do as I say, not do as I do. You kneecap to kneecap with them and help them figure out how to get this done. And then you raised good people up to to help them become real rock stars. And they got to, you were transparent with them, let them see what was really happening in the business, what you were trying to do. They participate in the journey by being in your peer group meetings and things of that nature. So they see behind the curtain. So they're getting a full 360 degree view of the company. They've got leaders who they can see are growing. You found good quality people and you raise them up kneecap to kneecap. And this is how you develop a team, right? And you built the systems. And so that is that you deserve credit for that. Lots of people want that. It didn't happen miraculously. It happened because of your hard work. And so congratulations to you. It's why you won the EAY championship. It's why they voted for you because they could see that in you. Now, the second thing I want to talk about is you just said something that is really, I would say, is the crown jewel of being a small business owner. The crown jewel of being a small business owner has got, I think, two basic categories. The first category is building a business that you actually don't want to retire from, that you enjoy so much that you can see yourself doing for as long as you feel like doing something, for however many hours a week you feel like doing it. The second crown jewel that you have in a business is to have that business that you enjoy so much provide enough excess that you can actually start to build a business that doesn't rely on you generating cash today, that you can do it right, that you can build it intelligently, take advice from the people and then move and take the quantity approach. So keep trying and iterating. And it's okay if it doesn't make money right away, as long as you know you're continuing growing and improving, and eventually it will become that thing that is so good and so powerful that people will not only want it, that they will refer others because of how amazing it is. And the only reason it was able to get there is because you were able to build your primary business so that it generated enough income so that you could be free to do this. And that's a very enviable position. We know a few people in Partners Club are in that position. You're two of them. And so congratulations to you yet again. So now here you are. You've built a great team that run great systems. Now you've got a business that's continuing to grow and going to have better future cash flow. And now you're looking forward to building a new model and under a new product or service offering that's going to not yield you any income for a couple of years. And while you know you have to be strategic about it, you're comfortable with it. That's a wonderful place to be. Before I pass it back to Michael, I do have one kind of nuts and bolts question for you. Of all the things you've learned in our world and in your own studying, what was the thing that you felt like tipped the scales for you? Because you guys are in contingency work, not in cash work. And so that answer is sometimes different from the people that are in cash work. Like they'll say, well, I doubled my prices. That's not going to be your thing. They say, I collected more of the money that I normally get paid. Well, that's not going to necessarily be your thing. So for you, what was it besides just general systemizing your business? Was it understanding systemization and grafting new people in, or was it something else that was the big moving piece for you that got the whole thing rolling?
For me, it was sort of what Bart said. You're a professional, but you're a slave to work. Yeah. And so freedom from bondage is a big deal. And mm-hmm. The only way that you're going to be able to do that as an attorney is figure out the math, which is figure out the business side of it. Mm-hmm. And I had no business experience, which is why this was all like, this is an alien corporate. We're being taken over. Bart's saying some weird stuff. I don't know what's going on. And Bart was like, dude, I need a reprieve. I need to see my wife occasionally. And I was like, but I know, but I'm an attorney. You're telling me I'm just a business person. And so of the two of us, I was probably the one who drug my feet the most. And Bart worked to make sure that I understood the importance of what was happening in 2019 at the end of it. And I'm glad that he did.
I'm going to be more nuts and bolts. It was as basic as knowing the numbers. The reality was that I kept track of those things in a helter-skelter way. And without knowing where your cases are coming from, you can't make wise marketing decisions. Without knowing what's happening when the phone rings, and whether or not you're scheduling people at the rate you should, you can't make the changes that you need to increase that. Without keeping track of how frequently you hire or fail to hire, you can't make the change to your hiring practices. And we didn't know the numbers as we should have. So now it's amazing to me. I don't know. I thought it was a bit hooey that if we just knew the numbers, we could make some decisions, but we can make the decisions when we know the numbers.
If our call is getting your arms around actionable data.
We hear that a lot, Michael, right? People are like, it can't be that simple. It can't be that simple. Just know the numbers and it gets better. But it's amazing how often that actually happens. By the way, I think you got our headline for us, Bart. The finance major turned lawyer who didn't know his numbers.
There we go.
But I could do a mean cross-examination.
What about that?
Yeah, I bet you could. Yeah.
The dancing boots is not going to get...
We can get the dancing boots in
there. I like that too.
Boots and, but we didn't do the hand puppets, and now we will.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Hand puppets. At least you didn't have a sock puppet. That would have been.
Hey, the good news is you guys gave us no shortage of headlines in this episode. Yeah. So we appreciate that. And obviously we appreciate you guys being willing to share your story and share some actionable tips and feedback. I think this was very valuable for law firm owners listening to this. So first and foremost, Bart and Seth, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate it.
Thank you. You're so welcome.
Of course. And for the law firm owners listening to this, thank you. Thank you for investing your time in listening or watching. And we just ask, if this isn't your first time listening or watching and you've got some value from today, which there was no shortage of it, make sure to hit that subscribe or follow button, depending on where you're listening or watching. Hit that like button below and then show some love in the comments to Bart and Seth. Let us know if you've got any questions or just generally speaking, show some love. But thank you both for being on today. Thank you to the law firm owners listening.
Yeah, Bart and Seth, hey, if anybody wants to get a hold of you, please don't give your cell phone number because the head count that's listening to this is going up. But if they wanted to get a hold of you and learn more about what you're doing or maybe the charity that you talked about, Bart, what's the best way for them to do that?
Email, would an email, a personal email address be okay?
That'd be great.
Sure. So it's my first and part of my last name. So it's BartSolo@comcast.net. Happy to answer people's questions.
Mine is S Holiday. It's two L's in Holiday because I am special at some point. S Holiday at McMahon Firm, which is a mouthful. MCMAHAN Firm, FIRM.com.
Nice. You couldn't find a longer one, so you went with that, huh? We'll be sure to put that in the show notes. Appreciate the both of you for being here. Thank you for sharing. I'm confident that somebody that was listening, whether it be at 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, struggling to figure out where they were going next, you gave them some hope that there was a proper path for them to take. So appreciate it. Congratulations to what you've built. I can't wait to watch the next leg of your journey. And as always, let us know how we can be of service to you. I think that's the pod.
That's a wrap.
Thank you.
Thank you.